The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to be taking a look at the case of a woman who is now incarcerated in a mental institution and being forced to accept electroconvulsive therapy. Many of you heard me mention her name recently on this program. So we're going to take on the case of Elizabeth, and we're going to see how can we help her. And I'm going to give you a call to action. Who can we contact? What's being done? And then I'm going to segue into Dr. John Breeding and talk about electroconvulsive therapy, the type of therapy that Elizabeth Ellis is being forced to receive as accepted, proven, beneficial medical therapy for her condition. Also joining us in that discussion will be David Oakes, Director of Mind Freedom International, an Utney Reader, and he was in Harvard. He is a major activist in the psychiatric area. So we're going to take that on as the second part of our program issue. Our major issue of today is about how the government spends our money at the same time that they should be honoring people who need that. Head Start, they're going to deprive 218,000 children of what they need. They're also going to cut $1.3 billion from Social Security, delaying benefits to 500,000 Americans. They're going to slash $1.3 billion from community health centers, taking primary care away from 11 million patients. They're going to reduce or eliminate Pell Grants to 9.4 million low-income college students. They're going to cut $405 million from community services block grants, affecting 20 million senior citizens and families and children and disabled, and they're going to end job training and other employment services for 8 million Americans. But with all that they're going to do that's negative, they're going to give Boeing $35 billion defense contract. We're going to focus on that pork, and we're going to make that our issue. So that's coming at you. Time permitting, I will also address what I consider one of the single most important issues that no one is talking about. No one on the right, no one on the left. No one in the alternative media. Why not? And I'm going to play you two pieces of tape so you hear directly from the individuals. Because unless you hear what is being said out of their own mouths, you would find it hard to believe that we have such corruption going on in our government. But I want you to hear from their own mouths so you'll realize that nothing was suggested out of context. We take on social issues, health issues, alternative healing issues, and we begin. For those of you who are finding a challenge to a good night's sleep, I do not suggest that you use that little pill that gives you a night's sleep, but then tells you you could end up dying of the side effects. Instead, new information, as published in the peer-reviewed journal Phytotherapy Research, shows that something as simple as drinking a cup of passion flower tea can boost sleep quality, and that's good. Quote, the findings that Passiflora improved perceived sleep quality appears to be the first evidence for the efficacy of the herb on subjective sleep quality in humans. This suggests the passiflora, which is passion flower, may be a viable alternative for managing mild sleep quality impairments. And that was according to Dr. Russell Conduit from the School of Psychology and Psychiatry at Monash University in Australia. Now, many of us in this field have recognized passion flower being able to allow people to have a calming effect in the evening and get a good night's sleep. I would add, I would use 1 to 3 milligrams of melatonin. And if a person tends to have anxiety or feels that they can't just rest at night, they've got too much on their mind, then also use theanine. And that, at let's say 200 milligrams, would also be good as well. So those are some of the things that we could immediately do to get a better night's sleep, which affects about 20% of the population. Could chocolate and oranges help prevent frailty in old age? A study from the University of Nottingham established that this is the case. When they took a look at 270,000 individuals from the Dunhill Medical Trust, and this study is a rather substantial study. So they found that the polyphenols in chocolate, and I'm suggesting the dark organic chocolate, and also the bioflavonoids, and especially quercetin in oranges that strengthen capillaries, and strength collagen synthesis, all of that helps. So if you're over the age, let's say, of 70, organic raw chocolate, you could put a scoop of it, a teaspoon, each day in a blender, and a health shake. You could mix it into your cereal. It gives a wonderful chocolate flavor. And then just, I suggest the best way of doing this is to take a whole orange, meaning the peel, the seeds, everything, and juice it. If it's just a little bit tart, which it might be, add in some raw honey, which also has wonderful quality of antibacterial and antiviral action on your throat. It can help you at this season keep your throat protected from viruses and bacteria in the air. Separately, cleanse your blood with a powerful herb. Now, this is in Nutritional Herbology. And they're talking about something that, again, people have been using for a long time as a natural blood cleanser or blood purifier. Drinking 2 to 3 cups a day helps purify the blood, especially if you've had any form of infection or if you've had a skin disorder, acne, psoriasis, rosacea. The plant is native to Europe and Asia. And it's used by those who know how to use natural herbs, and it's burdock root. Quote, when herbalists have long used burdock for its demucicant effects, and both externally and internally, for cleansing and purifying, especially the blood in the urinary system, it shows powerful beneficial effects. So let's add burdock root to how we can clean up our blood. Now, who would I consider this most beneficial for? People with hepatitis, kidney infections, urinary tract infections, candida infections, people who've been using chemotherapy or have had radiation. So that is who I would suggest that for. And also, diabetes is out of control in many countries, and this is something completely within our control. This is the latest on health and nutrition as represented by the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington, Seattle. Quote, people with diabetes in the United States and several other countries do not get effective treatment to control their illnesses. And they're not getting it from health insurance, not personal wealth. Why? They don't tell you why. But here are my suggestions on this. If you don't treat diabetes, you're more likely to develop heart disease, cancer, arthritis, depression, fibromyalgia. So it's in your interest if you are pre-diabetic or diabetic, and that represents about 80 million Americans alone. This is so simple. Here's what you do. In fact, last night at our Healing the Brain health support group, we only have 4 more weeks to go, and people are making great progress, by the way. My suggestions. Because someone in the group last night said that they had gone from a very high blood sugar level and diabetes to now their blood sugar went from 170 resting blood sugar, which is very high and dangerous, to their blood sugar is now 80, and that's in a good place. So they no longer even have the diagnosis of diabetes, and they're no longer on the medication. How? No mystery. Exercising every day, 6 days a week, for 45 minutes in power walking. Then working with resistance exercises to hit the other muscle groups, the body. Then starting the day with a health drink, rich in chlorophyll, low in calories, with coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and phytonutrients from berries, because diabetics can have berries, because berries have low glycemic activity, meaning low sugar, especially raspberries, blackberries, black raspberries, and the like, pomegranates, tart cherries. Throw all that, and if you don't have that, throw the concentrate in. Then have one really good meal a day, but not overeating, and then a smaller meal in the evening. Always the smallest meal should be in the early evening, and don't eat late at night. But if you do feel hungry, just take a protein shake. So if you make one protein shake in the morning, and you have your fiber, your essential fatty acids, a high-quality, non-genetically engineered protein, and your phytonutrients and chlorophyll, then drink some in the mid-morning, boost your energy. Drink some in the mid-afternoon, drink some in the mid-evening, so you don't then snack. A, you're going to lose weight. Your blood sugar will be more stable. You'll be healing the cells and protecting your DNA. You'll be cleaning the blood and rejuvenating DNA, all of which helps take you out of a diabetic state. So easy. And finally, the Mediterranean diet goes a long way. This is from Jason Mars from The Greater Good. Here's what it says. This is from Berkeley. I consider myself something of a prospective mediator, meaning that a serious meditation practice is always something I'm about to start next week, but not now. So for years, I've been making a mental note of new studies showing that meditation can literally change our brain structure in ways that might boost concentration, memory, and positive emotions. The results seem enticing enough to make everyone drop into full lotus position until you read the fine print. Much of this research involves people who have meditated for thousands of hours over many years. Some of it zeroes in on Olympic-level meditators who have clocked 10,000 hours or more. Pretty daunting. Meditating for just 30 minutes a day for 8 weeks can increase the density of gray matter in brain regions associated with memory, stress, and empathy. Well, a new study offers some hope and makes the benefits of meditation seem within reach even for a novice like me. The study published last month in Psychiatry Research, Neuroimaging, suggests that meditating for just 30 minutes a day for 8 weeks can increase the density of gray brain matter regions associated with memory, stress, and empathy. And that's good. Now, here are my thoughts on this. I believe that the average person wants to de-stress, doesn't want all the hassle, but really doesn't know how to meditate, and frequently feels uncomfortable or doesn't find it convenient to go to a class to do meditation. It's easier to do yoga, for example, or to go work out. But if you were to simply do a simple exercise each day, simply put on some very, very soothing music, no vocals, something with chimes or flute, violin or harp, something that would be very, very soothing to the ear, and just sit and take an object that you really find attractive, like maybe a single flower, a rose, something that smells good, like lilac, lavender. And or a candle, light a candle. And in a quiet place for 30 moments, put the music on and simply stare at that object. That will relax your mind. It will rebalance the left and right hemispheres of the brain. Breathe deeply, and as you breathe, put a hand on your abdomen, and as you inhale, that hand should come out, which means that the lower area of your lobes of the lungs, you're getting oxygen into. Then as you exhale, exhale slowly, and then at the end of your exhale, a little extra effort to get the last of that carbon dioxide out. That also allows you to breathe deeper the next inhale. So by deep breathing, deep diaphragmatic breathing, focusing on an object of beauty and tranquility, listening to soothing and relaxing music for 30 minutes, you are meditating. Start with that. And you can change the objects and you can change the music. But if you do that for 8 weeks, you're going to find yourself less stress hormones circulating in your blood. You're going to feel better about everything and be more relaxed at how you deal with issues. Once you've done that, then I will take you to what we call mindful meditation. I will then show you a different form of meditation that actually allows you to focus on an object or a problem or an issue in your life that's bothering you, a relationship, work, finances, health, and actually use your meditation in a way that is not done in other cultures. Now, I've studied meditation techniques all over the world. And whether it's the Jains or the Buddhists or Hindus or whatever group uses meditation in a constructive way, I believe that there's another frontier. Focusing on a problem but with a meditative mind, and then getting new insights on how to solve the problem, coming out of the meditation empowered and relaxed simultaneously, rather than just relaxed. So it's a form of meditation I created. I call it mindful meditation on problems. But that's the second step. The first step is simply being able to meditate. And as I just read from that guy's note, he always thought about meditating tomorrow, because it was too much of a hassle. Now you can do it from your own home in this way. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hip parade and ballyhoo. The lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of the subway train, the rattle of the taxi, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Maxine's when the Broadway baby says goodnight. It's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night. Milkman's on his way.
Do you know who that is? Who's singing that? I'm Gary Knoll. Now to the issue part of our program, and after I finish this brief, comment by Robert Shear from TruthDig.com on the Boeing boondoggle, Pork and Fly, I'd like for you to call in with your thoughts. This has become a very popular part of our program. The lines light up. Completely, we can't get to everyone, but at least every day we're getting more people to share their thoughts on this, and every day a different social commentary. And then our guest, in the second part of our program, we're going to take on the case of a woman who did not want to go into a mental hospital, who was completely reasonable, and yet they took this peaceful woman out of her home, arrested her, took her to a hospital, and forcibly gave her electroconvulsive therapy. We're going to have Dr. John Breeding, who is a psychologist in Austin, Texas, and David Oakes, offering up a challenge. And we will also tell you why electroconvulsive therapy is not and should not be considered for anyone for any reason. In fact, Jason just came into our studio, and Jason, you put up on Progressive Radio Network blog under Calls to Action the article that I wrote on electroconvulsive therapy, which is a scientifically based, fully referenced, with all the scientific references, article that can be used in a court of law. And by the way, which is different than all the other articles that you see on the internet. I wouldn't say all the articles, but the majority, in that they put up little snippets of information. But if you had an important issue, whether it's on not wanting to take a vaccine against your will, or not wanting to drink fluoridated water, or not wanting to have your dentist put a silver filling, which is 52% mercury, in your mouth, and you wanted hard, hard scientific evidence to present to that person, you want something that is really scholarly. All of these articles are scholarly. You could use them and have been used in court cases. So the one on against electroconvulsive therapy is up on progressiveradionetwork.com.
Correct.
And we have a lot more up there, too.
Oh, we have a whole series.
Good. I'll come back to you in a few moments. And so I'm going to do our calls to action, but that's just because of our guests coming up. I want to let them know that. This is from Robert Scheer, and I'll quote, and this ties into what I said earlier. The Democrats and Republicans don't have a problem cutting out programs that benefit tens of millions of Americans, the poor, the middle class, college students, senior citizens. They're cutting those programs. And at the same time, they're giving Boeing $35 billion, which is more than all those programs combined. Quote, "The gift that keeps giving should have been the headline on the Pentagon's decision to award the Boeing company a $35 billion defense contract. Defense of the nation, of course, had nothing to do with it. Since the end of the Cold War also ended the need for mid-air refueling of the nuclear-armed bombers intended to retaliate against the Soviet first strike, a scenario brought to the public eye in the 1964 movie Dr. Strangelove. Indeed, at a time when drones seem to be bypassing the need for manned military bombers and fighters of any kind, and when school teachers and firefighters are being terminated across the country, the awarding of this long-delayed and always questionable military-industrial complex scam, fraud, is simply perverse. There has always been vast bipartisan support for spending upwards of $1 trillion a year on the various items that claim to enhance our national security. For Republicans, their attack on big federal spending rarely include the more than half of the federal discretionary spending gobbled up by the military programs. For Democrats, the defense pork has always been defended as jobs programs, and that was the theme of what the Seattle Times headlined as Victory Rally in the historical home of Boeing operations, where the new plane is expected to create 11,000 jobs. At the rally, Washington's liberal Democrat, Senator Maria Cantwell, was cheered by the crowd when she said, quote, "There could be no better economic news for the region, and Boeing will maintain their superiority in making the best airplanes in the world," unquote. She and fellow Democrats, Senator Patty Murphy, were held by workers shouting, "Thank you, and my children, thank you." There's not a word in the article quoting anyone as to why this new plane is needed, other than as jobs programs. Actually, it isn't a new plane at all, but rather a militarized retrofit of the wide-body Boeing 767, the passenger plane that is to be replaced by the Boeing 787 Dreamliner, which has all sorts of problems. Bloomberg News reports on the rise of Boeing stock after the Pentagon awarded the contract made the connection between the defense and profit quite clear. Quote, "Building the tanker means Boeing can continue to make the wide-body 767 jet on which the plane is based. The backlog on the 767 has dwindled to 50 orders as customers await the 787 Dreamliner. The composite plastic plane, now about 3 years behind schedule. The news is an antidote to Boeing's struggle in recent months with the Dreamliner and the 747 Jumbo Jet. The passenger version of the 747 is a year late, and Boeing is running 2 years behind schedule on the freighter model," unquote. So, faced with major problems developing the next generation of civilian commercial aircraft, Boeing has been blessed with a massive Defense Department contract that will allow it to use an old, about-to-be-discarded assembly line to refurbish the 767 at enormous cost to the taxpayers so that it will be fit to haul fuel and serve as a gas station in the sky for planes that no longer have any strategic mission at all. This is the same plane that Republican Senator John McCain killed some 5 years ago when his staff sparked an investigation that sent to prison Boeing's chief executive officer and a former Pentagon official who had been given $250,000 to the vice president of Boeing. The company also hired her daughter and son-in-law. Boeing's CEO resigned and Boeing's contract to build the plane was canceled. The Pentagon had not asked for the refueling tanker, but top Air Force officials, in collusion with Boeing lobbyists, did an in-run around Congress that resulted in the passage of an appropriations to lease the planes. McCain described the situation in November 19, 2004 speech, quote, nearly 3 years ago, behind closed doors, the Appropriations Committee slipped a $30 billion rider into the fiscal year 2002 defense appropriations bill before the rider appeared in the bill. Air Force leadership never came to the Authorization Committee about this issue. In fact, tankers never came up in either the president's budget or the Defense Department's unfunded priority list. The rider was, in fact, the result of an aggressive behind-the-scenes effort by Boeing Corporation with considerable effort from senior Air Force procurement officials and others, unquote. At the time, post-9/11 hysteria was the fuel that drove this egregious waste of taxpayer dollars. Today, it is the stalled economy and the jobs and profits the military contractors spread throughout the land. But the result is the same. For all the talk of politicians from both parties about cutting waste, the military boondoggles remain sacrosanct and hardly provide the tempting target for savings afforded by a school teacher's salary. End quote. That's our issue. Your turn to speak out. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'll share my thoughts very briefly. I have no problem with a corporation hiring 11,000 people. In point of fact, it'll probably be closer to 7,000. Here's the problem. The majority of that money will become the profit for Boeing. Do you realize that they will use that profit, millions of dollars, to turn around and hire ex-generals, hire ex-procurement officers from the Pentagon, so that they'll go right back into the very offices they just retired from and get more contracts? It becomes a never-ending loop. Why not do the same? Why not do this? Why not take that $30 billion, and how about let's saving Head Start programs? How about saving the food programs in schools? How about saving the police officers, firefighters, and school teachers that we desperately need? How about putting at least $5 billion of that into infrastructure repair? In every city and county and state in the United States, we have failing infrastructure. How about hiring local people in every small town, small suburb, large city to hire people to fix the bridges, the water mains, the dams, the dikes, the tunnels that are in gross disrepair? Some are 70 to 100 years old. How about also reforesting every state in America? With $5 billion, we could have an enormous amount, tens of millions of trees replanting, reabsorbing water, trapping carbon, lowering global warming, and giving younger people who would be those hired to plant those trees. How about also having a program of putting assisted living centers in every community in America so as a senior begins to age and can no longer fully take care of themselves but don't need a nursing home, they will have a place to live where they can help be subsidized to have holistic health care, quality lifestyle? Do they not deserve that? Have we forgotten what it means to be a senior citizen or an individual in need? So for the same amount of money, we could help 30 million Americans. That's why I'm concerned. Those are my thoughts. I want to hear yours. Let's say hello. Mike from Hicksville, New York. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. How are you today?
Everything's good. Thank you.
I was just wondering if you are familiar with chemtrails and if it might be possible that they could be using these jets for that?
No, they're not using these jets. I am very concerned about chemtrails. I am very concerned about Morgellion's disease that I believe come from these chemtrails. We are doing a major investigation on both chemtrails and illness patterns in that area. Plus, we also have uncovered documents showing that the chemtrails were used in many cases, including the releasing of whooping cough. Excuse me, hang up and listen over the phone because you're on a cell phone and it's causing static here. We can show disease increasing in areas where chemtrails were releasing different bacteria and viruses, and I will have that on the air in about a month. I don't like doing things superficially. It will be a definitive two-hour special on the truth of it. But here is something that's also important. Recently, in fact this week, Roman Bistrinic released on the Health Sentinel, which is a very good publication, and I recommend it, an article about newly discovered documents of how the government was testing bacteria and viruses and vaccines on prisoners, on armed personnel, armed services personnel, on poor people in ghettos in the United States and elsewhere. We have put up a major article on Progressive Radio Network on our head front page. I broke this story October 1989. 22 years ago, I detailed all of the experiments the government had been conducting without our knowledge or consent on Americans. Read the article. They never stopped. They're still doing it. So what I broke as a major story, it was a cover story, 22 years ago, is still news today. But go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, read the article for yourself. And now you'll see why chemtrails are serious, they're real, it's not fiction, it's not some wild conspiratorial theory, but I like to have the scholarship and the science and the evidence that locks it up completely. Okay, thank you for your call. Let's say hello to Brad from Brentwood. Brad, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Gary. You know, it'd be nice to get jobs, but you got to watch out what jobs you get, because with this military money, there's going to be a lot of machine shop work. And there's something called MWF on the OSHA website for metalworking fluids. But a lot of shops don't change those fluids, and there is a history in that on that OSHA website of larger companies such as TRW and Ford and Chrysler having had people get sick from the MWFs. But OSHA has not passed a law saying that OSHA has to cover MWFs. They do not cover them. And rancid fluid, as we know, has made people sick. I'm one of them. When I went to the doctor at an occupational clinic in Stony Brook, she said, I don't want to hear your list of symptoms, because my shop had three people in it. And OSHA did not want to get involved, but they had to. And my doctor refused to send the on-site industrial hygienist, which was paid for. She gave me a New York State prescription form saying he would investigate my job site. Canceled his investigation, which sabotaged my comp claim. So I've had to bear the burden of the expense and the illness and the loss of work in the military-industrial complex. We were not just making grinding tools for military, but this is the low end of the spectrum. Nobody cares about you as long as the top gets their money. Gary, can you see this?
I sure can see it, and also there's a larger philosophical issue that we should, in a reasonable way, consider. I would rather see jobs that go into non-military, non-war areas. Someone once argued when I mentioned that I am opposed to funding any anti-personnel landmines, meaning you step on a landmine and you get killed.
Yeah.
Well, every year over 10,000 children have to have amputations in Cambodia, Vietnam, because we put these down in Afghanistan and we don't pick them up as well as other countries do. But we were the country that refused under Bill Clinton refused, and George Bush refused, and Obama has refused to sign that international treaty. Shame on us.
Right.
Why? Because it means jobs, and I say if I had a choice of helping someone get a job, I'm not going to get a job, help anybody get a job where they're doing something that could end up killing people and killing children. If that's the only way you can get a job, friend, then you are in the wrong business. And so I believe that we have to stop funding the military-industrial complex and saying, oh, well, they got jobs, and those are votes, so let's keep it going. Thank you very much.
That's why I volunteered and helped Paul paint your office.
Thank you very much. Let's say hello to, quickly, Ernie from White Plains. Ernie, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for another show. Thank you for all your advices in the health area and et cetera. I just wanted to comment that I thought that Obama was going to gear towards cutting back a little bit on the military, but I guess he didn't. I kind of was suspicious that he wasn't going to when I heard some of his last speeches during when he was running for president. And so it's no surprise that he's following the same directions as the previous president. I would like for you to comment regarding why is it so difficult for these governments or presidents to reduce the spending. I know you talk about the, what is it called, the jobs, but it has to be more to it. It's not, I think it's more not just jobs, but there's probably other reasons why. Anyway, I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys.
Okay, good comment. This last comment I can do on this right now. It's very simple. I remember Doug Henderson coming in the studio and saying, give Obama a chance. And I say, I will give him a chance. But Doug, have you and the other people in this audience done your homework? I did something very simple. I looked at all the people that Obama had worked with and for. Where did he get his money? The largest single group, Wall Street. The largest single individual group on Wall Street, Goldman Sachs. I looked at the nuclear industry, the coal industry, the fossil fuel industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance industry. That's where his support was. That's where it was when he was a legislator in Illinois. That's where it was when he was a junior senator in Congress. I looked at the bills that he had supported voting on and which he had voted against. And then I ask a simple question. What is the likelihood that he would do a complete about-face and vote in just the opposite direction? I have yet to see any politician in my lifetime do a complete 100% about-face on all these issues. And therefore, I just thought, let's see whether he continues being who he has always been, irrespective of what he had to say to get elected. And that's who you have as your president. Thank you for your calls. I appreciate the input. Each day I will do an issue segment. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day. The sun is shining, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand.
I'd like to welcome all of you. We're going into the last segment of our program. Our guests are coming up in just 2 minutes from now. We're trying to get both of them up. Jason, did you hear about the $3 million redneck lottery?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Well, see, I'm from West Virginia. I'm part redneck. It's pretty good. You know,
wow.
The winner gets $3 a year for a million years.
That's fun.
No, where I grew up in West Virginia, you know, there's a redneck law. It's kind of not official, but it's stated. When a couple gets divorced, you can still stay cousins. Do you hear about the redneck? In my state, the governor's mansion just burned down. Yep, pretty near took out the whole trailer park. Especially the library. Lost both books.
Oh.
You got to visit me in West Virginia sometime.
Some great lines.
What do you got there?
I got this great letter from a new fan of ours, David Fenstein. I have recently listened to a number of your radio shows and am quickly becoming a fan. I enjoy your healthy living show and your political and progressive viewpoints. You have actually inspired me to take action. I would really like to get involved with any group that thinks the same way you do. Can you point me in the right direction? I'd really appreciate any advice you can provide.
Got an idea. Okay, that sparks an idea. We have hundreds and hundreds of very good groups in the United States and around the world seeking to have an impact upon social issues. Rarely are they successful. They're underfunded. They're not communicating with other people. They have their own unique and specific ideology. We need to have a clearinghouse where people can see which issues exist, what they would like to put their energy into, and then how do they do that? Well, to do it right, you have to have a lot of information, meaning videos and articles, and then a call to action. All right, so I'm motivated, I've read, I'm educated, now I want to do something. What can I do? All right, is it a matter of a bill, a piece of legislature, a rally? What can I do? Most people would support something that's important to them if they knew what to do, when to do it, and some say, oh, I would have come to that rally, I didn't know it existed. So we don't have that now. I'm working nonstop to get our two finished products, as far as our videos, into final production. We're filming, as you see, upstairs every day. People are coming in, professors and activists, on Poverty Inc. and Greed Street, which is our film about Wall Street. We're going to bring them both out this summer as major feature documentaries on social issues. So I'm going to be here all Saturday and Sunday filming. I'd like to see people who would like to take the responsibility upon themselves to take one single issue, whatever it may be, it's their choice, and to really collect all the data together and bring it in so that we can have individuals pulling together all the resource information, whether it's on vaccines or on Gulf War vets, whatever it may be, on genetic engineering, so that on gas fracking, hydrofracking, so that if you want to be educated, you know what is there, you can work with it. Right now, you have hundreds of groups, but you don't have the clearinghouse. That's what we can do. So let's get people in here from, let's say it on Saturday, because I got that premiere at where Queens. I'm going to do in Queens at 1:30 to 3, and then a workshop 5:00, 5 p.m. I'll be back. 5:00 at 2307 Broadway. Let them call you if they're coming, and then from noon. On Saturday, because we can also use some volunteers helping with filing the films, whatnot. And that way we can actually, over a period of a month or two, pull all this together and have one central place. Because right now, we're trying to put up all the articles every day, 24-7. We hired hired researchers to stay up at night just to get articles. So at any time during a 24-hour period, if you go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, you're seeing the latest in like 20 different areas. Women's health, environmental issues, mental health issues and rights, Freedom Watch,
economy.
The economy, health, alternative healing. So we're always getting the best articles, scholarly articles. So this will take it to another level and bring all these thousands of groups together. Okay? Give your number.
646-926-5428. 646-926-5428.
Good, and that's Jason. And if you'd like to come in, and then we can get people participating. Let's get people in this audience who care. Now, let's say that they live outside of New York and can't make it, which a lot of people do. Why don't you work out some phone conferencing so they can listen in and see about helping wherever they're at in America, all right?
I'll get the information and put it up on our site.
Thank you. Let's go over now and say hello to our two guests who are now online. I was just told by my engineer, David Oakes, director of the Mind Freedom International. Utney Reeder, in November of last year, declared David one of its 50 visionaries. He attended Harvard but was diagnosed as schizophrenic and bipolar and was forced on psychiatric drugging and solitary confinement. He cured himself in 1977 through exercise, nutrition, wilderness journeys, and work, and has remained antipsychotic ever since. And since the 70s, David has been a social activist dedicated to the reform of the psychiatric profession. And joining him is Dr. John Breeding. Dr. Breeding is a psychologist down in Austin, Texas, and he works with adults and children and families for more than a quarter century. And he focuses on non-drug alternatives to conventional pharmaceutical-based therapies. He also was the director of the Texans for Safe Education, which challenges the increasing epidemic in psychiatric drug solutions. And he's an activist opposing psychiatric oppression, including electroconvulsive therapy. He's the author of four books, including The Wildest Colts Make the Best Horses and Eyes Wide Open. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
Let's start with you, David. We've got a woman who was taken from her home forcibly. She was doing nothing that was inappropriate. She was forced to undergo. She's still in that institution getting electroconvulsive therapy. First, tell us about the woman. Tell us why Americans should be concerned. Then bring us to a call to action, what we as individuals can do. And then from that, I'll go over to John. I want you to tell us why electroconvulsive therapy is not and should not be the therapy of choice for any condition and what it really does to the brain. And if people want additional reading on this, we have just posted just now on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com under our investigations area a really comprehensive, fully referenced article on why electroconvulsive therapy is out-and-out quackery and dangerous, and yet it is one of the preferred therapies within the psychiatric community, and they have the power to give it to you against your will in most cases. Let's start with you, David.
Well, Elizabeth Ellis is a Mind Freedom member in Moorhead, Minnesota, and I was very impressed talking with her. She's a retired school counselor who has a master's degree in counseling, and at the age of 67, she's still focused and strong. But she had a horrible experience with her sister dying of cancer, and the day her sister died, back in the fall, her family locked her up for grieving in strange ways. They said not danger to self or others, and so she was electroshocked a dozen times forcibly in Anoka psychiatric facility in Minnesota. They released her in January with a provision that she continue having outpatient electroshock under court order against her will. So people don't know this, that there's not only forced electroshock, a lot of people don't know that, but that it is done sometimes on an outpatient basis where you're ordered to come in from your home. We dealt with this with the Ray Sanford campaign a few years ago. So Elizabeth did report for the first one on January 12, but for the next one on January 28, she just sat at home. Kind of did a sit-in with her husband, said, no way, I'm not going in. Ironically enough, that was the first day of FDA hearings ever about the danger of electroshock. So she called it. She didn't go in, so they sent her court papers signed on Valentine's Day saying, we're going to lock you up, and we recommend months of maintenance electroshock. That's their quote. So she was shaking in her boots, and sure enough, she got locked up again. She's locked up now, and she is at risk of receiving more involuntary shock, running electricity through her brain against her will, over her clear and articulate and poignant expressed wishes. And the main action we're encouraging right now is flooding Al Franken, Senator Al Franken's office, his staff has shown the most interest. The governor hasn't. Governor Dayton apparently himself has mental health issues that he's embarrassed about and won't deal with the issue. So we're asking people to call Senator Al Franken, write him, email him. They can just Google Senator Al Franken and flood his office right now. And also people can look at our website for more information, mindfreedom.org. And Elizabeth is featured right there.
All right, good. Thank you for that summary.
You bet.
Now, Dr. John Breeding, tell us why electroconvulsive therapy should not be used. What is the science against it? What is the science for it? And how do they continue to be able to use this without being challenged on the fact that they have no study showing its efficacy?
Well, there you go, Gary, and I know you've written white papers on this, and you know, you started already answering the first question in regards to science. Basically, what's gone on with the electroshock industry is that, as with a lot of industries, is that the reason it has continued, in spite of the fact that its sister treatments back in the day, being the lobotomy and the insulin coma shock, have both gone to the archives of the Medical Atrocity Museum, but electroshock continues because public relations has triumphed science. The science is very clear that one electroshock always causes brain damage. It's just a matter of how much. It's very obvious when you look at the brain, which operates in millivolts, that's thousands of volts of electricity, and then you administer instead literally hundreds of volts directly into the brain, that you're going to cause cell death by electrical and heat damage. You know, you're going to cause cell death by breaching the blood-brain barrier and having all these toxins flow into the brain. You're going to cause cell death by initiating a grand mal convulsion, which the rest of medicine and the building trades all work very hard to avoid because they're known to cause brain damage. So it always causes brain damage. It's a matter of how much. The main indicator, practically speaking, short of an autopsy or some other way of really looking at the brain, is memory loss. Memory loss is a sine qua non indicator of brain damage, and electroshock always causes memory loss. It's a matter of how much. It's often profound and severe, and this is very, very, very well documented in the literature. Even the proponents of electroshock nowadays have to acknowledge memory loss. Occasionally, and sometimes more than occasionally, for example, with elderly people, electroshock causes death. So that's the most severe effect, obviously. The last thing I would say is electroshock is never necessary because there's much more safe and benign and helpful ways to help people, especially with depression. So that's a danger. In terms of effectiveness, bottom line is there's, for example, in terms of the science, there's these so-called sham studies, just like with comparing a drug to a placebo. You compare administered electroshock versus telling people you're going to electroshock them and then not. And the outcome data, even using the lousy outcome criteria that is typically used in this research, show that the sham ECT works as well. The last thing is that, again, even the proponents of electroshock have to acknowledge that it doesn't really work in the sense of, quote, work beyond a short-term effect. David presented the concept of maintenance electroshock, and this is what the industry does as a way of avoiding looking at the reality that it doesn't work, because they always interpret data that shows this doesn't really work as, well, that's the nature of the disease, that's the progression of the illness, and so just like you always have to keep taking drugs, because there is no cure when mental illness is chronic and progressive and it's a brain disease, this is a propaganda. So similarly, we use maintenance electroshock instead of just acknowledging this is failure of treatment. So in summary, it's dangerous, it's brain damaging, it's not effective. The reason it continues is a victory of public relations over science.
It also causes major seizures. It literally causes neurons to explode. When you're, it's like someone taking a baseball bat to your head. And I have asked repeatedly for any psychiatrist or any neurologist who supports this to come on the program and debate me on it. As you know, I've written multiple white papers on this, and so we have the science. I want people to become educated, because if you're educated on an issue based upon the real science and not this fictitious proprietary science, then at least you'll know why we're concerned.
That's exactly right.
And we put the paper up. Now, David, give us and we're putting Al Franken's phone number so people can call. If he becomes an advocate, and I don't know what his position is on this, but if he becomes an advocate to help stop this and stop her treatment so we can get a hearing, if we can get a hearing in the state to allow you and others and other scientists to go in and present information of why this woman is not being helped, this is not scientific, this is actually hurting her, and if any claims otherwise are simply bogus, then at least we can make a difference and rally people around this. So give Mind Freedom's website and phone number.
Sure, Gary. It's mindfreedom.org is the website, and our phone number is real easy. It's 1-877-MAD-PRIDE. You don't need that last E, but it's 1-877-MAD-PRIDE. You know, John was one of the folks to actually get to the FDA hearing I mentioned, for the two-day hearing. The first time in 70 years the USA has had any kind of hearing about whether to look at the shock device for safety and efficacy. And that panel, because of brave testimony by electroshock survivors who got there on a snowy day and testified, it voted that indeed it is safe, it is unsafe, it's hazardous, it needs to be tested. There's no data for efficacy, especially after a month. You get that head injury high. You mentioned the baseball bat to the head. Neurologists know that you get a personality change after a blow to the head that can be fairly random, but that can include some euphoria. But that fades after a while. So the ironic thing is that this forced electroshock that Elizabeth said no to, she was right. The panel said that it's a hazardous device. There should be an immediate freeze nationally. All state governments and the federal government should have an immediate freeze on any involuntary shock. Now, we're against all electroshock.
I'm against all of it. Let's do this. Oh, yeah. We're running out of time. Let's ask this audience to get on the phone in a polite and constructive way, but let Al Franken know you've got to run with this. It's your state. You're familiar with the issues. Support real science, support ethical healing, support freedom of choice, and this is fascism. We have his phone number. You go to progressiveradionetwork.com real quick. It's 202-224-5641. 202-224-5641. Call him 100 times. We're going to let Al know we support his efforts to stop this. Thank you, gentlemen, both very much. Breeding and David Oakes of Mind Freedom. We will continue watching this. We are going to do all we can to help this woman get out of that institution. This is like Russia. This is like a gulag in psychiatric hospitals where they would take dissenters, political dissenters, and give them electroconvulsive therapy and psychiatric drugs.
Gary, you're the only media covering this. You're the only media. The corporate media is part of the problem. You are a voice that is speaking out against horrible corporate media silence.
Well, we're going to speak loud, and we're going to be intense on this. We're not giving up on this, fellas. 202-224-5641, Al Franken. Give him a call. Be polite, but be very focused. He's got to intercede. He's got to raise hell. I want to see him raise the same hell and take off some of the smirkiness that he did when he was on Air America. Let him get it in the face of the governor, and we will be there to support him. We have listeners everywhere. We have millions of listeners. We will support this woman getting out of there and support all people to have freedom of choice and mental care. Thank you all very much. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all. Sunday night, 8 p.m., right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Tune in, and we'll talk on the issues important to you. Have a nice day, everyone.
Like the beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. Like the tick, tick, tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall. Like the drip, drip, drip of the raindrops when the summer shower is through. So a voice within me keeps repeating you, 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 night and day. You are the one. Only you beneath the moon and under the sun.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.
Day and night, why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the